This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey, and we come now to the politics and government part of our Friday news roundup. In a few minutes, we'll hear what's been happening in Illinois state government and politics from Hannah Meisel. But first, Linda Kenyon covers Washington politics and our home state congressional delegation for Illinois Public Media. She has other obligations during our live program today, so I spoke with her yesterday evening about what's happening in D.C. Linda Kenyon, welcome back to the show. Good to talk with you again.
I'm glad to be here. Thank you, Brian.
So once again, Senator Dick Durbin is in the news this week. I think this is the third week in a row we've talked about him. This time it's because on Sunday he tested positive for COVID-19, and that's the third time that's happened this past year. What are the consequences for that for business in the Senate?
Well, the consequences could be great because the Senate only has a slim majority in favor of the Democrats. It's a 51-49 majority. So that means if there's one more person who's out, they can't really pass anything that unless they get some bipartisan support on it, because they do tend to vote along party lines on a lot of legislation. Right now, there have been voting on the National Defense Authorization Act. By the time this program airs, they may have passed it. They worked till 12:41 in the morning, local time, last night, trying to get through a slew of amendments to the bill. And Senator Durbin, as the second most powerful senator in the Democratic majority, would probably have been shepherding that bill across the stage, so to speak. But since he's not there, somebody else will be doing it and has continued to do it, not the least of whom would be the Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer. Now, there's one other aspect of this National Defense Authorization bill that's very interesting when it comes to Senator Durbin. For example, usually what will happen is if there's an amendment or a separate piece of legislation that lawmakers really, really want to get passed, they will sometimes attach it to a must-pass piece of legislation. And in this case, it's the bill that's been on the floor, the National Defense Authorization Act. Senator Durbin had a piece of legislation he wanted to add to the bill, but because he's out with COVID, now he cannot do that. And he is in isolation in his home district. So this was an amendment that would prohibit what they call those hidden fees, those swipe fees, when you use your credit card. Sometimes extra charges are tacked on, and the American people either don't realize it or they don't care, perhaps. But for the most part, a lot of these swipe fees do add up over time, and Senator Durbin wanted to do away with those swipe fees. Well, I guess that's going to have to be on another bill, because there's no more options for him to staple it to this piece of legislation, the National Defense Authorization Act.
That's remarkable. You know, you think of the people who have been literally wheeled into the Senate over the years to cast votes, but I guess this is our new COVID reality. You know, you mentioned the sort of the slim majority that the Democrats have, and when I think of Senate rules and Senate procedures, the word arcane often comes to mind, and we know that Congress has a long break coming up for August. How is this slim Democratic majority going to be affected by that? Is there going to be more of a crunch with other legislation once everybody comes back?
Well, I will tell you that they are hoping to be out of town by the end of this week. Probably by the time this program airs, they will already be out of town, and they'll be gone for the entire month of August. So whatever they don't pass ahead of the August break will be the post-August rush. And here's what's going to happen then. We'll have the Senate and the House come back on September 5th and September 12th, respectively. And at that point, they're going to have to race through all of the 12 annual appropriations bills to fund the federal government, because current funding will run out at the end of the fiscal year, which is the end of September. Come October 1st, there will be a government shutdown. However, they've already made plans to kind of avoid that possibility by talking about a continuing resolution, or a CR, as they like to call it up here. And that is something that would fund current government spending at the same level, not at new fiscal 2024 levels. And they would do that to avert a government shutdown just long enough to pass their appropriations bills. Or they will take several of their bills and they will meld them together and pass what they call an omnibus bill, which is several funding bills for several agencies or departments. Or, and I'm not making this up, they will have maybe one or two bills. They'll put those together and they'll call that a minibus. They will drive the minibus down the aisle to the well of the Senate, and they will pass that piece of legislation as well. So there will not be a government shutdown. But, you know, there are a lot of, you know, pins and needles that will come between now and the start of the new fiscal year, and a lot of late nights.
And we call those Christmas trees in the Illinois General Assembly in Springfield because everybody wants to hang an ornament on them as they rush for passage. All right. Last thing I want to ask you about is President Biden on Tuesday, on a more serious note, created a new national monument dedicated to Emmett Till and Mamie Till Mobley. We plan to have a broader conversation about this coming up on the program soon. But for now, just say a little bit more about the reasons behind that.
Yes, the Emmett Till and Mamie Till Mobley Memorial was officially dedicated, or I shouldn't say dedicated so much as prescribed, in a ceremony this week at the White House, where the president announced this on what would have been the 82nd birthday of Emmett Till. And as you know, Emmett Till is that 14-year-old boy who was severely beaten and lynched after he allegedly whistled at a white woman in 1955 in Mississippi. Well, his mother, Mamie Till Mobley, insisted on an open casket at the funeral. And since his hometown was in the south side of Chicago, the funeral was at their home church. And some 125,000 people filed past that church to see the horror of what was done to Mamie Till Mobley's son. And it became a clarion call for the civil rights movement. Well, President Biden says there's no way that Americans should not know what happened. And so the memorial is going to be in three separate locations, one in Mississippi, where the body of Emmett Till was found, one in Mississippi, where the two white men were tried and acquitted, only to later say that they actually did it. So the courthouse is the second part of the memorial. And the third part is going to be that church in Chicago.
Linda Kenyon, thank you as ever for sharing your reporting and expertise with us.
Well, I'm happy to do it.
And here to share her reporting and expertise with us live is Hannah Meisel, who covers state government and politics for the nonprofit Capital News Illinois. Hannah, welcome back. I hope your summer's been going well.
Thanks, Brian. Thanks for having me. I hope your summer's going well, too.
Can't complain but for the heat, but then we can all complain about that, so who cares? I want to start with, on a more serious note, a report from the Office of the Auditor General this week that was put out on Wednesday, I think. It found the State Department of Employment Security overpaid more than $5 billion. Let me be clear of that. That's $5 billion with a B dollars overpaid in unemployment in the first few years of the COVID-19 pandemic. What the heck happened there?
Well, I mean, if we remember all the way back to March, April 2020, when things were so uncertain, when, you know, restaurants at all, so many places, public places were closed, and layoffs left and right. Hundreds of thousands of Illinoisans filed for unemployment, or at least attempted to. This was completely unprecedented. Of course, no state was prepared for this, but $5.2 billion in overpayments, it is not a good look, especially because $2.8 billion of that was from basically identity theft. And that is not recoverable. Now, the state is working to recover some of the others that can actually be traced to real people that we know of, because, you know, maybe they set up fake businesses, or they use their you know, real names and social security numbers to get more than they actually deserved in unemployment benefits. But, you know, this is a major issue, and it's not a good look. Of course, Governor Pritzker this week, when he was asked about it, he pointed to states like New York with $8 billion in overpayments, California, which of course is much bigger than Illinois, but $20 billion in overpayments. So, you know, Illinois is not alone in this, but this is a major issue. And it's, you know, it's not like magic money falls out of the sky. Unemployment insurance is paid through payroll taxes on employers. And in 2022, lawmakers and business and labor, they had a major negotiation to kind of set Illinois' unemployment insurance trust fund, which is where unemployment benefits are paid out of, right again. And, you know, it cost everyone, you know, fewer benefits in the long run and, you know, higher payroll taxes on businesses.
Which probably shows up in our pockets as higher prices on the you know, that those businesses are charging. How have state lawmakers responded to this? I got a flurry of press releases in my inbox. I'm sure you did as well.
Sure. You know, I mean, you know, not surprisingly, Republicans especially have pounced on this issue. This is something that they've been beating the drum on for a while. You know, I think it was back in 2021, maybe even late 2020, I can't remember now, that we first started hearing about unemployment fraud. And, you know, so this is something that we've known about for a while. Getting a full accounting has been very difficult, though. You know, even in this report, the $5.2 billion, merely an estimate. The state's Department of Employment Security is still kind of trying to wrap its arms around the total number. And, you know, I should say other states are still accounting for theirs, too. So we don't know necessarily, and I'm not sure that we'll ever know exactly where Illinois falls on it. But, you know, the report pointed to weaknesses within the state's system, especially the Pandemic Unemployment Assistance Program. This, if people remember, people who are freelancers, 1099, gig workers, these are folks who are normally not eligible for traditional unemployment because they don't work for an employer full time who would pay payroll taxes on them. Now, the POA program was 100% federally funded. But it was up to states to kind of set up these programs without federal assistance, really. This is, you know, in the spring of 2020. And so IDES said that they were just not prepared. And they also, you know, threw some blame back on the Trump administration for not, you know, for putting this on them. However, in the audit, it said, you know, explicitly IDES basically chose to not employ some of the anti-fraud measures that were recommended by the federal government. You know, for one, there was this multi-state kind of cross-matching tool, cross-matching, basically, you know, if I apply for uninsurance, the state will check to make sure I'm not in prison. By the way, you know, gosh, what is the number? $6 million paid out to 481 dead people, $40.5 million in unemployment checks written to incarcerated individuals. That's something that usually would be checked, but cross-matching takes a bit of time. And so IDES decided to suspend that temporarily. The federal government recommended join this multi-state cross-matching entity, but the state didn't actually join it until September of 2021. So that's a long time to leave vulnerable. And most of the fraud, especially the identity theft, came from this PUA program.
Wow, interesting. Well, there was another multi-billion dollar report of bad news from state government this week. This one looked at the state's prison infrastructure. Now, this was from an outside consulting company that the state hired, but the final report found that the prisons in Illinois need at least $2.5 billion, again, $2.5 billion with a B, dollars in repairs. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, that's $2.5 billion that, if not addressed, will actually double every 5 years, according to this report. This outside consultant did, I should say, also obtained by Chicago Public Radio Station WBEZ, which is the reason we are talking about it. You know, the conditions in Illinois' prisons are, I think, worse than most people who, even those who are plugged into this issue, could imagine. The report basically, anything that could be wrong with Illinois, you know, any sort of building is wrong. Mold, leaky roofs, sewage backups, unsafe drinking water, raccoon infestations. Since last December, 10 state prisons have had drinking water violation notices issued from the Illinois Environmental Protection Agency. Problems with heat and hot water. Pontiac Correctional Center, you know, one day last winter, you know, Pontiac was forced to evacuate, transfer dozens of their prisoners because of those issues. The consultant group basically rated three of the state's 27 prison facilities as approaching inoperable. Basically, the issue is that in the 80s and 90s, when we were kind of at the peak of the tough on crime movement, a lot of prisons, not just in Illinois, but all over the country, were built. And these prisons also, you know, they were, well, first, the prison population in Illinois, especially, you know, in the last 10 years, but at the height of COVID, a lot of the prison population shrank. This is, you know, kind of a new program, home release, because it is expensive to house prisoners.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, these facilities are aging, and it's not, you know, it's a politically touchy issue. Lots of people have lots of different feelings about prisoners. You know, some people would prefer to, you know, not think about the conditions in which prisoners live. You know, tough on crime folks might, I'm not, you know, characterizing that people are heartless, but, you know, they might just say, well, you know, you did wrong and you deserve to, you know, you don't deserve to live in cushy, but this is far, far, far below from any, quote unquote, cushy situation. This is, you know, this is hazardous for people's health. And you know, that exacerbates the costs that go into prison healthcare, which is another thing that is mentioned in this report.
Yeah, absolutely. And as the reformers always say, like, most people in prison are getting out again. How do you want to treat them? What do you want to do? You want to try and rehabilitate them or give them a better opportunity at becoming better members of society? We're going to have to leave it there. Hannah Meisel covers state government and politics for the nonprofit Capital News Illinois. Hannah, great to talk with you again, and have a good rest of your summer.
Thank you so much.
Coming up after the break, we're going to be talking about Italian Beef and the Bear, that TV show from Hulu. This is The 21st Show. Stay with us.